Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm Lisa Thomas.
I'm Jen Siegel.
And I'm your host, Ben Robbins.
This is a show where we discuss everything from weird sex stuff
to online dating
to the challenges
of having kids and raising a family.
By the way, we each have two kids and we probably wouldn't listen to this podcast with them, but that's your call. Listener discretion is advised.
Lisa and Jen met on the first day of graduate school and have been friends ever since. For the last decade, while Lisa was running a sex therapy practice, Jen was raising her kids at home.
And Ben is just a guy who started a podcast because
he didn't want to pay for marriage counseling.
Cheap bastard.
Today we're talking about sex through the years. Basically, what does sex look like as we age? Obviously, things are different when you're 14 or 15 than when you're in your 20s or 30s, from what I hear. Well, I'll let you know when I get there. But the first thing I guess I want to sort of throw out there as a general talking point for this is there anything to look forward to? I feel like this is kind of a difficult discussion about aging and losing your boner.
You know, I think that there are things to look forward to. I think that sex over the lifespan changes, but it doesn't necessarily stop. So I was once taught that sex in the beginning and sex at the end kind of look similarly in terms of, you know, sex at the beginning is a lot of kissing and foreplay and cuddling. And then sex in midlife kind of is more intercourse focused, or at least intercourse is a part of the script. And then towards the end, when penises become less reliable and vaginas kind of atrophy and begin drying out a little bit, then we go back to petting and kissing and foreplay. What do you think, Jen?
Well, we talked about this a little before, and it occurs to me, yeah, I don't disagree. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a whole lot of, you know, being pushed up against the wall type stuff. But maybe you don't want that when you become 65, 70. That's maybe I'm just trying to make myself feel better at it, but maybe that's all I'm going to want is some cuddling and
companionship.
I don't know if it's likely, but yeah. Maybe I'm just being hopeful.
Somebody to watch Netflix with.
Yes, somebody to watch House of Cards with.
Right.
Matlock.
Matlock.
I think the
Murder She Wrote.
Exactly.
Price is Right.
I think I was kind of hoping when you were saying it comes full circle that there would be some sort of diaper reference in there based on last week's discussion, but I don't think
there could be.
Maybe you become an adult baby the older you get.
Maybe that's what happens.
I think it actually is.
Yeah.
And you no longer have to shop for your adult diapers on the adult diaper website. You can now go into the grocery store to get them.
Absolutely, right. Because it's part of your sexual script.
But there definitely
and your life.
There definitely are a lot of wild cards these days. You know, there are medications, pharmaceuticals to help extend the life of your erection.
Mm-hmm. What about for women? Because you talk about, you know, the atrophying. Is there something to keep your vagina young?
There is.
You know, I feel like I saw something on the local news this week about a pill for women.
Right.
Oh,
Addie, the introduction of Addie.
There was a sex therapist talking about that.
There was. Do we know anybody?
I recognize your voice.
It could have been me.
She had that sultry radio voice.
Yes.
So the deal with Addie basically is it's a pharmaceutical marketed for low desire, but really it's an antidepressant.
Addie.
Like ADD. So really it's an antidepressant, and it's being marketed for women who maybe don't have high desire, but really they're looking at trying to balance out their chemicals, hoping that they will have an increased desire to want to have sex.
So it's not vascular at all.
No, it works completely different. It's not vascular.
So it's the kind of thing a woman would have to take daily versus the blue pill, which you take, you know, for the 4 hours you want to have an erection.
Right. Addie, you have to take daily. And in the control studies, the women were taking it for 24 weeks before they reported any kind of a
insane horniness.
Right. Mm.
So my question...
How long? Sorry.
No, that's okay.
24 weeks.
That's a long time.
It's a really long time.
So in half a year,
right,
it's going to be great.
Right. And the side effects were not pretty. They included...
That's what I heard.
Loss of consciousness.
Oh, you get low blood pressure.
You can't drink, low blood pressure. So I really don't think that this is going to end up being something like Viagra was. I mean, Viagra really
changed everything.
It revolutionized the way that men can have sex.
So was this one of those this medication was being prescribed for depression. And I kind of, it makes me think of Wellbutrin when they were prescribing it for depression. And then all of a sudden it was what the most amazing stop smoking aid, because they figured out people would stop smoking. Right. Was it like that? Like they were getting this for depression and then this was like, oh, look at the side effect. They want to have sex all the time.
I don't know if they specifically sought out to create something to try to increase sexual desire in women, or if this was something they stumbled across and it ended up that having increased desire was a side effect of taking this medication.
So maybe this is too obvious, but shouldn't we be talking about ecstasy?
Sure.
Because when I was a boy, that's what ladies took to get in the mood.
That was a big deal in the 70s. Like if you read like the Kinsey studies or the Masters and Johnson studies, they gave them ecstasy. That's what sex therapists used to do.
I love the 70s.
Yeah.
I know, right?
It was a prescribed treatment.
I think there's sort of like clandestine ecstasy therapy you can do.
It's been interesting, and I've been a little bit amazed. Over the past probably 6 months, year, the number of middle-aged women that have talked to me about using vape, so smoking marijuana in a vaporizer as kind of a prelude into being sexual with their partners.
Interesting.
Really?
That they've women who, you know, don't look forward to sex, can't relax when they're having sex, have tried vaping and smoking marijuana to try and get in the mood, much like having a glass of wine would get women who like to drink to relax in the mood. I mean, I was seeing this couple for about 6 months, trying to work with them on communication, and she just had no desire, didn't find him attractive. Like, sex had always been awkward. There's some sexual dysfunction in their history. And she reported one day, 6 months into therapy, came in and she said, I went to a dispensary over the weekend and was telling them I had no sexual desire, and they recommended using a vape pen, and I used it.
I want to hear that conversation in the dispensary.
She said we had great sex. She's like, I found it enjoyable. I was able to climax. Like, it sort of solved a bunch of their problems.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
It just seems so, counterintuitive. But I mean, whatever works for you, right?
But I think going back to the Addy discussion, I think when you change your senses, sometimes sex can become more enjoyable. So if you're...
You go with the vape pen.
Right, with the vape pen or with an antidepressant. I mean, you change your perception.
Your chemistry,
your perception.
So there you have it, folks. We recommend you consult your medical experts at your local marijuana dispensary.
Yes, for your sexual dysfunction.
For all of your sexual
bud
dysfunction.
Tender.
And on that note, I should just point out that we don't condone or endorse drug use.
Right.
Illicit drug use.
Correct.
Underage sex.
Correct.
Vaping in general, because it's tacky.
But I think the conversation does come up because we are in Colorado.
Vape pens. I don't endorse vape pens.
It's legal here, so
I don't endorse man buns. I don't endorse fedoras.
Man
buns. I
don't
endorse rhinestones on jean pockets.
Right.
Okay.
Man buns is kind of, it's supposed to be making a big comeback.
We're not
a big deal.
Ben will not be bedazzling anything this evening.
Mm. No vajazzling.
So I think what women can do to keep their vaginas from drying up and atrophying.
Oh, I asked you if you can keep them from
either you have to continue having intercourse, like penetrative intercourse, or if that starts going away, you can use like a vibrator or a dildo.
I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
Because we need to get back to this part.
Okay.
You're giving away the goods.
Just get so excited about this part.
Lisa can't wait to talk about preventing
vaginal atrophy. I'm all about the solutions, right?
Yes, she's presenting the filet when it's appetizer time.
Okay.
I think we should talk about your kids.
Okay.
Okay, what do you want to know about them?
Whether or not they're dating, whether or not you've had the talk, whether or not they are starting the puberty stuff.
I'm going to let Jen take this one first. There's a lot going on in her house lately.
We need to go
take it away, Jen.
Prepubescent.
All right. So, yes, I have two sons, and one is 10 and a half. And he is just starting to enter the change.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest thing is he's open and he talks to me about it. So he asks me questions. Mom, this is going on. Mom, I noticed this. So we have very open conversations. And I've had open conversations with them since they could talk. I've always used the appropriate words. It's a penis and a vagina. Mm-hmm. You know, I have lots of friends that use euphemisms and I did not. He just started fifth grade. And literally just over the summer, I've noticed a lot more discussion about girls with his friends, mostly about how gross they are. He spent about the week before school started walking around the house saying, God, I pray that this one girl is not in my class. And he calls her his quote unquote mortal enemy, which means I'm pretty sure he's in love with her.
Absolutely.
This mortal enemy stuff has been going on for months. But dating is not occurring. He's still, I think it's different for boys. It'll be interesting to hear Lisa's perspective because she has a 10-year-old girl, but boys are still in the stage right now where their girls are gross and they don't want anything to do with them. But I know in the back of his head, that's not what's happening. I know he's thinking he likes these girls. So, but yeah, there's some body changes occurring and they get growing and changing this year, which he is super dying mortified over.
That's a class.
Yeah.
That's
a DPS class. It's at the end of science. And I made him feel better though the other day. We were talking about it and he was lamenting growing and changing again. I said, I don't understand. You know exactly what's going to happen in puberty. Mm-hmm. You know all the changes. He knows what sex is. He knows how babies are made. He knows how they come out. Like, he knows everything from a very basic standpoint. He doesn't know like the pleasure aspect of it necessarily, but he understands all the functions of it.
I still don't know that part.
I know.
To be totally fair.
Yeah.
Ben's willing to learn.
That's why we're here, right?
Willing to practice.
That's why we're here. But I was saying, he feels better about the growing and changing because I told him that boys and girls are separated. Mm-hmm. And you could see him visibly relax. I was like, did you think that you're going to have to sit next to like your mortal enemy and talk about vaginas and periods?
I did. Didn't you guys have that?
We got separated.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
We were separated.
I was public
as well.
School, Denver. Sorry, public school separated.
We did both. I don't remember.
So yeah, once he realized he's not going to have to sit next to his mortal enemy and hear about her vagina and the period she's going to have, he was extremely happy about that. I said, you're just going to sit with all the dudes and talk about balls and it's going to be fine. And he was very happy about that.
Did you have to have a proper sex talk or did he just sort of know that from the internet?
No, I made sure I had the talk with him before. I wanted him to get all that information from me.
Okay.
He has pretty restricted access to the internet. He wouldn't really have an opportunity to go on there and find porn or anything on his own. The laptop is in common areas. He doesn't really get to, I mean, he can use some time on the iPad. He's got an iPod Touch that I know what all the passwords are. And I remind him all the time I can look at any history, but he doesn't even have Google on that. But on the iPad he does. And the problem is YouTube. So all that stuff happens in common areas. And so, yeah, the internet, all that stuff, he doesn't get to go to his room with that. We don't have TVs in their rooms. They don't get to keep technology in their rooms when they go to bed. And
do you trust him with his friends, though? I mean, he could be getting that, on the playground.
And he definitely is. I mean, his best friend went through sort of a growing and changing class with his church last year. And I would hear them in the back of the car talking about, oh, man, you should see the things I've seen in this book. So they totally talk.
I just assume kids nowadays learn that on their own. Before you've ever had to talk with them, they already know.
Oh, but you know what? They do hear crazy things. I'll never forget my friend when our kids went to kindergarten. Her little girl came home the second day in kindergarten and informed her that she heard what sex was.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, really? What is it? She said, it's when he puts it in your butt. So you can't rely on your friends. That's why you have to get to your children. Oh, I said, you make sure she knows no matter how cute he is. That's not how that works. So you do have to make sure you get to your kids before, society and the internet and everything else does. Because I also don't want him looking at porn because I don't want him thinking that when he's 14, he's going to run into what he sees as a porn star with huge boobs and no hair. And that's reality. Because that's not reality.
It's not in my experience.
Yeah. Well, maybe Joe's, but not everybody else's.
What about you, Lisa? Have you had the talk?
We have had the talk.
And how'd that go down?
We did it in two parts. I did part of it and then my husband did part of it. So we have a 10-year-old girl. And so she sort of, I think, got both perspectives. And we just tried to come from a scientific place and talked about biology and named the correct body parts and asked her if she had any questions. And
you did it separately? Or
we did it separately. It's just
covering the same material?
A little bit.
I like that.
I sort of talked to her more about her period and wanted to make sure she understood what that meant. And she's seen, I buy sanitary products when we go to the grocery store. So I sort of hit that side of it. And my husband hit more, sperm and eggs and fertilization. And he sort of talked about, he got that end of it.
Assuming you didn't use a religious basis for morality in this discussion, how do you present that aspect of it? I was raised in a strict Catholic scenario where the ethics were pretty black and white, and you just didn't do it because you wanted to go to heaven.
Right.
But right. What do you do when you're trying to raise kids relative to some general morality that's non-religious?
Well, I think you need to arm them with a sense of how things work so that they can make informed choices about their bodies and what they're doing when it comes to having sex or not having sex. And I think that they need to realize that there are outcomes for choices. There's you know, responsibility that can come with taking steps with having sex. And I think as she gets older, I mean, right now she came home from summer camp and was very excited because a boy had asked her out. Mm-hmm. But it's still in the phase now where it's sweet and it's innocent. And I don't think anything, you know, is going on beyond them asking each other out and maybe dancing at the Shabbat dinner or whatever they're doing up at camp. I think as kids get older, they need to just have a person who will tell them the truth, kind of talk to them about their choices and kind of next steps.
I don't know if it is a morality issue, to be quite honest. Like, I don't think of it as a moral issue whether or not he has sex. I think of it like we've talked about it when we had the talk about what sex is and how a baby is made. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I didn't get into the pleasure part of it, but I did say now there are people out there who don't take care of their bodies, who are sick, who have illnesses they can spread onto you. I said, obviously, you know how that's a baby is made. And truthfully, you don't want to have a baby every single time you have sex. Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of ways to keep that from happening. I said, and there's ways that you keep that from happening that protects your health and protects you from having a baby. And when you get a little bit older, we're going to talk about what those things are. But, you know, we just talked about how you don't have sex unless it means something. You don't, and that's all going to change for him, quite
honestly.
But
that's the morality. That's the fuzzy part, because there's definitely an approach that's sort of fear driven, I would say, that's like, you shouldn't have sex because you need to go to college and have a career. And if you get pregnant, right, then it won't happen. There's also sort of people have sex when they're in love and you should try to limit the number of people you're with. And that's sort of the gray area, I think, right, that's hard to describe when you're not holding a Bible in one hand. Mm-hmm. Did you tell him that he should or should not have sex with a lot of people?
No,
You didn't get into it? Or when is it appropriate to have sex with someone that you don't love or Mm-mm. No?
I don't think he's old enough for that yet.
Yeah.
I think that's a conversation that happens in a couple of years. I don't think it happens when you're 16. I think you're way too far by then. Mm-hmm. But I think as you start getting into more adolescence, because he truly is at the very first step of mm-hmm. puberty. So I think right. as you hit 12, 13, 14, that is when because those feelings of love, I mean, he might be a little infatuated with a girl, but that wouldn't make sense to him.
Do you guys remember when you were teenagers, what your thoughts were on sex? Were you afraid of it? Were you afraid to get pregnant? Were you
absolutely
trying to wait till
petrified.
Marriage?
No.
I was afraid to get pregnant.
I wasn't trying to wait for marriage. I was just afraid of being pregnant. That was the only thing I cared about, was not being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a morality issue for me. I didn't think it was bad to have sex. I didn't want to have sex with like 20 people. I did not want to be that girl with that reputation. But mm-hmm. I was not trying. I just, please God. I mean, how many times do you pray to God, I will never have sex again, God, if you please just don't let me be pregnant.
I think we've all
right
been
now.
There. But you do acknowledge a point about maybe slut shaming or 100%. Sort of a cultural pressure not to be that girl.
I don't know if I would have been. I don't think I was that girl. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't think that. Yeah, I think that there is a consideration, man, in high school, it's tough.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that girl.
Yeah, that's tough. I have vivid memories of that. For me, it was more about whether or not you want to get into heaven. But I personally started a little bit young by accident. But there was definitely when I was probably 13 on, I believed I was trying to wait until marriage. And, you know, it didn't happen.
Religion.
Just religion.
Religion,
just
like
that
parents.
You had to. Yeah, that you couldn't. It wasn't just that you could get pregnant. It was that you could go to hell.
Exactly. Huh.
And just for
serious.
The record, I went to confession after that, and I'm clear. I don't want anybody to be concerned about that. I'm in the clear now.
That's good.
But it's interesting, too, because Lisa and I are both Jewish. Mm-hmm. And so even from a religious standpoint, there is no real morality around sex for
in
Jews.
In Judaism, there's no...
No.
You shouldn't wait till marriage?
Well, I mean, if you're real Orthodox, I mean, and you cover your head and the women sit in a different part of
the
temple.
That's like if you're Orthodox.
Yeah, but for us, like, we're Reform. Mm-hmm. There's no morality around sex.
It's a pretty pro-sex culture.
I mean, abortions are not sinful for Jews either.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It just works differently.
It does.
We have some statistics here that show 17 years old is now the average age for kids to have sex for the first time, that contraception is up and
teenage pregnancy is also down significantly as well. I've recently read.
And that might be in this article, they attribute it to, and I think it was a CDC. It was attributed to access to information, the consequences of pregnancy and STDs and things like that. I don't know if I believe that. I wonder how much has changed beyond this. I think aside from sort of the religious scare of things, I would imagine there's other things about about growing up in the internet age that might be different when you're talking to kids about sex for the first time?
Like the technical virginity issue?
Technical virginity. I'm thinking even about sort of sexual preference and gender and the fact that when I was learning about sex, you were straight or you were gay. And nowadays, I think we're getting away from even qualifying that as good or bad.
Right.
You know? And what's it mean to teach a kid about you have sex with whomever you want, whether it's a boy or a girl?
I've said that from the beginning to my kids. Mm-hmm. Like when we played the game of life, when we had it at 4, I was like, and you get to where you get married, I always was like, do you want to marry a boy or a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you'd like. They've always been aware of it, and I've always made sure they were. But I think that is a newer thing.
It is, and I, as much as I like to think I'm open-minded and progressive, deep down, I feel like it'll be easier for my kids if they prefer
a heterosexual
relationship.
I think that's true.
I don't want them to be discriminated against.
Right.
I don't know if that's going away for good, but I do think about it. I think if I have a preference deep down, it's that they have an easier path in life.
But it's not because you don't, that's because you have something against people who are gay. It's just because you think they would probably get along better. And that's probably not untrue.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think there are a lot of opportunities now just for people. But
right.
I do think 20 years ago when we were growing up, it was a lot. It was a closeted thing. Now I think definitely there's more people out and there's lots of opportunities. And I think that there's some areas of the country where it's celebrated.
Sure.
But there's still always going to be areas of the country where it's not. And that's where it gets tough. There's always going to be those people who, for no other reason other than just because they're sheep of religion, say, well, that's what the Bible tells me. And so that's how it is. And I'm not going to critically think about anything. I'm just going to say that's how it is.
Right. I do think that there's a lot more experimentation now than when we were growing up 20 years ago. I think there's a lot more experimentation with same-sex relationships, same-sex sex.
More fluidity,
I think, you know.
Just the thought of being openly gay in high school is foreign to me. I don't think I knew a single person. And I'm wondering.
But you were at a Catholic high school. Right?
True. But I sort of feel like generationally, I wonder how many people who were in high school 20 years ago knew openly gay people.
I knew openly gay people.
I had an openly
gay. But I went to public high school.
And I went to public high school and our AP social studies teacher was openly gay.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's probably a lot more common nowadays.
Did you have peers that were openly gay?
A couple.
See, I had a couple also. Uh-huh.
I wonder if it's going to change the demographics of the theater department entirely. Like there's going to be openly gay science nerds and openly gay.
Right, they don't have to flock to theater any longer to find people to hang out with.
Theater's going to suffer for this.
It might.
Right.
Yeah.
Enrollment is going to change.
No. Who's going to do that West Side Story production in eighth grade?
But I definitely think that, you know, when you raise kids, it's good to talk to them about their development, how they're feeling. I mean, I just think having an open relationship with your child will foster them talking with you. And I mean, if you have a good relationship with them, then you will have the primary influence. So you will be able to, you know, take a stand on things that are important to you. And even if they don't end up agreeing in the end, I think that you will influence them if you have a good relationship with them.
Yeah, I think communication's key. I think that you can't, you got to give kids credit. You know, they're smarter than we think.
Yeah, and they're savvy.
As much as I tend to want to scare my daughters away from having sex because they'll get pregnant, deep down, I hope they have healthy attitudes about sex too. And I think you can influence that by withholding too much.
Right,
definitely.
What was the story this week? I think it was St. Paul's University. There was an East Coast sort of fancy school that—
Oh, the boarding school?
They had a controversy related to, I think technically, it was a statutory rape case.
Right.
But what had come out is that there is this tradition of seniors petitioning
the senior
underclassmen,
salute.
The senior salute for sex. And there's sort of this culture of celebrating, referencing San Antonio Spurs basketball players' jerseys. You could say, I hit Ginobili this week, which is, you know, a certain number of girls I've slept with in college. And what was effectively happening is that the attitude was that men were using girls or women as sort of a sexual currency in order to drive their stats up.
And the other thing about that is that they said the girls looked at it as a status symbol if they were picked to be one of them.
Now, I think that's a lot less healthy to me to have those attitudes about sex. And that's sort of where if you're not using morality or religion to make that point, I find it harder to make.
Well, I just think that it is not responsible to send a college student to college, not having talked to them, especially, you know, you have daughters. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter. Like my hope for her and for her friends is that they are aware of what sex is, right, and they are aware of the ways that they can be taken advantage of. And mm-hmm. so they need to have an understanding that that can happen. Mm-hmm. Because I think so much of the time you hear about girls, you know, getting put in a new situation where all of a sudden, you know, they're like, somebody's having sex with them, or they, you know, accepted drinks and went with a guy, and they mm-hmm. just feel so badly about themselves after, sure, like it just happened. And then they feel bad about talking about it and secrecy. And I just think a lot of girls end up having mental health issues as a result of not being informed about what can happen mm-hmm. around sex and privilege and power.
Well, in thinking about Ben's point about how do you teach that kind of thing without a religion, I think a lot of it has to do with self-esteem and confidence, and you don't have, you know, if that's what you choose, then please be safe about it, but that's not what you have to choose,
right,
based on what somebody else thinks.
Say what you will about organized religion, but at least they give us some dogma that's black and white to
tell
your kids.
Right.
It's very
There's
clear.
No questions.
The decision's very clear.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's true. I've said it doesn't eliminate any gray area.
So, summing things up, when you're a teenager, that seems to me like sort of the formative years for understanding the literal realities of sex and developing attitudes towards it. Maybe you start to experiment with that in college. I would say the 20s are sort of when you kick the tires on a few jalopies, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And you start to try things out and maybe start looking for a mate and start considering someone you'd want to be with permanently.
Start learning about different types of sex.
That's what I was just going to say. I'm curious at what mm-hmm. age that sort of starts becoming more, yeah.
Depends on what your experience is.
Let's talk about the types of sex.
Different types of sex. I mean, just, you know, what you're into, what you like. I think mm-hmm. you get to a point, you know, mm-hmm. later in your teenage years or in your 20s where you start learning about how your body works, how you like to, how you have your orgasm, mm-hmm. what you like in terms of foreplay. You become more confident with kind of how your body works.
Do you think that, and once again, from my very conservative background, I would say that women tend not to be open about sex, or in my experience, they weren't as open about enjoying sex,
right,
or being willing to enjoy it until later in life. Do you think that's changing as well? Do you think?
I think it is, but I think that's where the old saying comes, like, you know, that women hit their sexual prime, you know, in their 40s.
Right.
Because I think the way it used to be is women just figured out what pleasure was as they got closer to 40.
Okay.
I think that, you know, for their first 20 years, they were sort of relying on their boyfriends or their husbands to teach them mm-hmm. about their bodies and teach them what they liked. If you think about it, I mean, we're almost 40 now.
Yeah.
Where did we learn about sex? I mean, I remember stumbling upon that book, The Joy of Sex.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did too.
Written by Dr. Yeah. Ruth.
My parents had that too.
I mean, that's like kind of where my formal sexual education
I don't
came
disagree.
From. Mm-hmm. That's where I learned.
The pictures.
Amazing
sneaking
hand-drawn
the pictures.
Book.
And Judy, seriously,
and
honestly.
Judy Blume books.
Oh, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Oh, forever? Did you read Forever?
All of everyone.
Oh my God. I was like, that's what sex is.
Right.
Like I finally had like a visual in my head. But again, it was a book, right?
I had a very romantic view of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was very white knight on his horse is going to make my life great and everything's going to be awesome.
Right. So I think girls now are more educated about what sex is just because they have access to information. I think we were really in the dark and we were very reliant upon guys to teach us. And I feel sorry for the guys. That was a lot of pressure that they
had. Yeah, but also...
You ought to figure yourselves out, and then you had to figure us out also.
Yeah, but you can't rely on a 22-year-old to teach you how to please yourself either, how to give you an orgasm. Or you don't.
Or you don't.
Or you don't.
You ought to.
Right.
Or not.
They won't.
I mean, just so much has changed. I mean, you used to have to go to a sex store mm-hmm. in like a seedy area of town to buy a vibrator. Like right. I remember clinging on to my then boyfriend, now husband, and being mm-hmm. like, we are definitely going to get killed
right.
in this area of town, like trying to purchase a sex toy.
But they put it in a nice black plastic bag so you could conspicuously carry it out of there.
Because nobody right. knows like what a black plastic bag yeah. means.
Now you can just go online to drugstore.com sure. and order. You have 150 different vibrators and all kinds mm-hmm. of different colors.
By the way, shout out to drugstore.com for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you.
Well, we are in our 20s now, kicking right. the tires, figuring out how to use a vibrator.
Right.
And maybe thinking about having kids for real. Maybe thinking about putting all that practice to work.
For reals.
For reals. And before we get into the details about how to make babies. We should probably take a break anyhow. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm your host, Ben Robbins, here with licensed sex therapist, Lisa Thomas.
Hello.
Licensed sex practitioner, Jen Siegel.
Hello.
And we are talking about that there comes a time when you stop trying to avoid pregnancy. And while that drove your sexual efforts for a long time, there comes a time where you're actually trying to hit the target.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't always happen on the first try.
And that is a weird thing because you have literally probably spent years doing
trying to
everything you can to avoid it. I took
the
that pill at the
of your
same
sexual
time
career.
Every day. And it was terrible. And then all of a sudden you're like, no, we want to get pregnant. And you assume that you barely missed it all those years. But then you're like, oh, but now it's been 6 months and we've been doing it all the time. Why am I not pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of messes with you a little bit. It's shocking. You expect to just...
kind of scary.
It is.
And it's fairly common.
Extremely.
And it's sort of self-fulfilling that when you worry about it not working, then it's less likely to work.
Well, 100%.
I think it's more common because now women are
waiting,
yep. getting educated, mm-hmm. going to graduate school, mm-hmm. going to yeah. medical school, going to law school. By yes. the time we get around to having kids, you're like in your 30s.
You're high risk. Once you hit 35, you're considered high risk just based on your age alone.
The way the world is set up does not really work with when we're supposed to be having our children.
Again, it's the
it's fertility.
It's the liberation thing.
It's like the peak of your fertility is like 18 to about 30. By the time you actually have enough money and education to have a child, you can't get pregnant.
Exactly. That is honestly the truth.
It's the reality.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's rough. I think infertility can be really hard on a relationship and it can really suck the joy out of sex.
And I would say, that's an excellent point. Because I would say I know more people that have had a harder time having kids than it just went smoothly.
Right. And I have a good number of couples that come to sex therapy to see me as a recommendation from their reproductive endocrinologist or their reproductive.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
You know, they get referred from some of the big reproductive practices in town. Because they are trying to get them pregnant and they've lost, you know, their relationship is like falling apart.
Oh, I see. It's a drag when you are trying to get pregnant. Sex is no longer sexy.
No.
Mm-hmm. It's really a job.
Right. It's like monotonous.
Yeah, right.
It really is.
It's not fun. Sterile. It's fertilization.
It's really not romantic.
Do you have some fancy tips for people like... inversion, different techniques to get a boy or a girl, maybe?
No, although I've had a couple of friends that, you know, swear by different home remedies.
There's always those old wives' tales that are,
like the gender calendars.
You do it from behind and it's going to be a boy because boy swimmers are faster.
Right. Or like if you douche with lemon afterwards, you'll have a girl because like girls are supposed to be more
sour, like a lemon. Like what the hell? Even if I wanted a girl, I'm still not putting a lemon in my vagina.
It's like the acidity of your vagina.
Give me a break.
Hey, some people will stop at nothing.
I think that you put your feet in the air and that helps after.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're trying to have a baby, it's wise not to like jump up and go take a shower. Like you should probably lay there and let the sperm like swim up. So you don't need to like stand on your head, but you know.
Give them a chance. Give them a fighting chance.
Give them a chance.
And if life gives you lemons, you know what to do with
them. Oh, here we go.
You're going to have a girl.
All right. So let's say by some act of God, we actually do get pregnant on our first try.
Did you get pregnant on the first try, Ben?
No, it took us a couple months.
And how do you remember feeling about it?
Relieved that my manhood was intact.
Exactly. That is what
target,
it is.
I'd hit my mark.
Yep.
But I like sunk those the battleship.
Moment, those moments, those months that you weren't pregnant yet.
Yeah.
Like how?
I was a little worried. I was like,
you thought it might be you?
I was like, I probably smoked some pot when I was a teenager. I don't know
They're
if that
all
did
exhausted.
It.
Yeah.
Did you guys talk about it?
We sort of agreed. We had friends who had struggled with it and we were so tired of hearing them complain that we had decided not to worry about it. Sort of officially. We made an effort to not care about it.
That really does help.
Yeah.
What really you does. Guys did you do anything differently? Mm-hmm. Like once, like, you know, 1 month
technique.
Became two months became
we
three.
Wore ceremonial furs.
Uh-huh.
We definitely used a TP. There was a lot of the old in out action. I believe the whole thing culminated in some grunting.
Did she use an ovulation calendar?
No, and we never even got there. It was sort of just...
Did you know like when you were supposed to be having sex, or were you just winging it?
No, we weren't winging it.
So she was tracking it.
It was like a day counting, a general day counting. Uh-huh. Like, we should probably do it every night this week.
Okay.
Sort of thing. That's all I remember, though. I remember, like I said, I think it was probably around 6 weeks that it happened. I think we only failed for a couple months.
That's pretty good.
If at all, but... yeah, there was some concern that I didn't have it in me to get it in her, but we were good. And then the second time around, kids are 15 months apart. The second time around happened a lot quicker, like first try, but that was on both kids were conceived on vacation, which is no coincidence, relative to the stress factor.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you think you were just having more sex 'cause you were away?
Lots of sex on vacation, lots of UTIs. That's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you urinary tract infections.
Got to pee after you have sex, yeah. Ladies.
I think we definitely tried the inversion, like, you know, hold your knees.
I did.
Yeah, sort of hold it in kind of thing. But I don't know if that matters.
I don't think it does.
If you fire off a good shot.
Right.
If your aim is true, it is what it is. That is an interesting point, though, is what a small little window there is every month. When you think about it, there's like a 36-hour window every 28 days.
I know.
Where you can actually conceive.
But as a teenager, it's the
you think
inverse.
It's 27 out of 28
every
days.
Every day of your
life. Yeah, every day. It is, because you don't know, because nobody
Murphy's
tells
Law.
You that. Yeah, that's right. So it is kind of amazing when you do hit the mark, because there is just by hours an amount every month that you can do that.
It's true.
So we hit the mark, we've got a baby on board, and I think almost immediately, especially if you struggled with it, there seems to be a tendency to want to avoid having sex because you're afraid you're going to jiggle something loose.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't really the case.
No.
And it's normal and natural to continue having sex through pregnancy.
Right.
All
but
the
loss
way.
Of desire is an issue, correct? Oh. Or increased desire in some cases.
I think there's loss of desire at the beginning and increased desire kind of in the middle.
Second trimester.
And then loss of desire at the end.
And then get the hell away from me at the end.
Right. Because at the beginning, you're sick as a dog.
Yes.
At the end, you're pretty
too
sick
big.
As a dog.
And just too big to be.
And the middle part. Game on.
Have you counseled couples through pregnancy and a desire to continue having sex?
Yes.
And what's the advice on that front?
Just, you know, lots of kissing, lots of foreplay, talking about kind of how you want sex to be different if you want it to be different. Discussing expectations for frequency. I've had couples, you know, sort of play let's make a deal where she basically agrees to like service him with blowjobs for the first trimester. I mean, I've had couples kind of negotiate all kinds of things.
Because what's better when you're nauseous and pregnant than blowing your husband?
but you seem to endorse it, that it's okay or good.
I endorse when couples can come to a conclusion that they're both excited about. I'm all in.
Okay. I hear about couples that sort of call it quits during the pregnancy and then for 8 weeks after the pregnancy. And although technically six, if you wanted to fight, but I've known couples who didn't do it at all through the pregnancy and then didn't have the effort or energy to do it after the pregnancy and went like 2 years without it.
Wow,
and that seems much more detrimental to the relationship
Agreed.
Than a little sleep loss.
Those are couples that do not absorb the impact of change very well, which is something I think you need to do if you're going to be married for the long haul. Mm-hmm. You have to absorb change.
So in spite of all the challenge of maintaining any sort of, and God, from what I remember, it was tough to even get a hug for
you
a period of time.
You just have to have good communication. You just have to talk.
But
you
when you
talk,
when all you want is sleep, you know, when all you can think about is getting a couple more hours of sleep.
Right. But I think if you're talking about that, if you're saying like, I'm just so tired, I'm so exhausted, I just don't feel good. Like, I think if you talk about it versus like not saying anything, then your partner's just like, what is going on with them? They've disconnected from me. We're not, you know, they're like avoidant.
And really when you're in the trenches like that and you're that tired and the kid's up every 3 hours, it really only lasts like 6 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And when you're kind of in it, you think that that is an eternity, but looking back on it, you're like, this is a drop in the bucket, really. I mean, we had sex through the second trimester, but by the third trimester, I was just like, ugh, I just don't want to be messed with.
Yeah, you were done.
I just want to be left alone. I feel gross. And you know what? A big part of it, too, was the baby's moving around.
Yeah.
I didn't have concerns that, like, he's going to poke the baby in the head. Or, I mean, that's not going to happen.
That's absurd.
But it's kind of weird when you feel it moving in your stomach. And then, I mean, it's just kind of messes with you a little bit. And then, you know, you get the go ahead at 6 weeks, which every woman prays to God they don't want, that their doctor will be like, you have to wait another year.
Right.
But that never happens. And there's a reason, because after 6 weeks, you really can get back and do it.
Well, and to sort of back what Lisa said, it's perfectly acceptable to say, you know, there's still some physical challenges to this. What do you say we just hold hands?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That doesn't go very far with me, but I would say that we should
find
something in between.
It's a start.
It's a start, exactly.
It's a start.
Do you have any memory of the advice to have sex to initiate the labor at the end of a pregnancy? When
I did that.
Yeah, when you're overdue and somehow your
doctor's like, go home and do it. And you're like, really?
Season the meat,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Can't I just walk around the block a couple times instead?
Yeah, do some stairs.
Yeah. We tried it. I don't think it worked.
Well, I think it's one of those things.
It worked for us.
Did it work? Like, it didn't work
next
for
day.
Us.
See, I think it's one of those things that if you're about to go anyway, maybe it'll jump you ahead 12 hours. But if you're not due for a week, it's not going to do anything. It's like, well, I won't get into too many details of those last couple of days, that things your doctor might do, but
sweeping the membrane.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but I didn't want to get too gross. But yeah, I mean, like, that did throw me into labor the second time, but the first time it didn't.
Sweeping it.
Yeah, thank you for the gesture.
I wish our listeners could see
that. The two-fingered gesture was perfect.
I'll put that up on the website.
Thank you.
The two-finger sweep.
But yeah, I don't think those things will kick you into labor unless you're seriously close anyway.
Yeah.
It's one thing to get past sort of those first few years of having an infant and toddler. But at a certain point, your kids become aware of mom and dad. And we've had the experience of a child bursting into the bedroom in the middle of some coital romance.
Bummer.
Yeah, but it's sort of eye-opening. Like, oh, wow, she can get out of her bed and hear us grunting in here and crash the party.
And she's scarred for life.
And she's scarred for life. And she'll be talking about diaper fetish someday.
Do you think she knew what was going on?
No, I think she's very confused.
Young.
I think she was just up in the middle of the night.
Why are you hurting mommy?
Why are you pushing on her like that?
Why are you wrestling? Why is mommy so quiet while you're wrestling her?
Is mommy asleep when you do that?
Yeah. It's an interesting point, though, because I'm sure you guys have experienced, you know, at a certain point you can't.
We started locking the door.
You locked
that's
the door.
That's how I know we're going to have sex. When he comes into the bedroom,
locks the door.
The door. I'm like,
going down tonight.
Pre-initiation.
No more sock on the door. No. It's the locking.
The
I agree, though. That is. Yeah.
I hear
door,
that sound. I'm like, it's on.
It's like a Pavlovian response at this point.
Right.
The best I can do to make foreplay exciting is just to turn the lock several times.
Right.
Repeatedly.
Like, how many people are here?
Right.
Exactly.
Your vagina starts salivating.
Okay, so we're through that. Lock the door. Nothing else to worry about.
The door.
Do you think it's okay to be honest with kids about mommy and daddy having sex? Or do you think you should
It depends on
how
age.
Old are they?
Yeah, it's
three.
An age question.
No.
You really want to go there? Because here's the problem. They will say, and what is that? Well, what does that mean? Well, and then what? And you just don't want to have to keep answering those questions.
I had a friend one time that they explained like how sex worked. And the kid who was like 12, he was like, well, can I watch? And they were like, no.
No.
You can't.
That went the wrong way.
So that could be a response.
Right.
And that is crazy.
That kid's in jail.
She was like, is that creepy?
Yeah. Talk about diaper fetishes.
Wow.
You want to watch your parents have sex at 12?
You're not supposed to ever want to watch that.
I was using that as an example. Like, you know, if you get very detailed and graphic, you know, and
it affects
they
them.
Start wondering, like, do you do it?
Right.
I have a question. I had this discussion with somebody the other day about what age it's no longer appropriate to be naked in front of your children. Because mine is 10 and a half and starting to hit puberty. And I am not parading around the house naked necessarily. Like, I'm not like, hey, I'm gonna go out and get the paper and drink some coffee here naked. But if they're in my room and I'm getting in the shower, then I undress in front of them and get into the shower. Or similarly, if I'm getting dressed and they pop in and say, can I have a granola bar or whatever, I'm not hiding that because I don't want them to think, oh, so being naked is something to hide or something that you don't want other people to, like, they know I don't want their friends coming in.
Right.
But is there an age at which that's no longer appropriate? Because I don't know that I feel that I know what that is, if there is.
You know, I don't know that there's necessarily an age. I think it has more to do with the maturity level and level of awareness of the child and sort of when it starts feeling.
See, and that was our discussion
maybe it's not appropriate
at some
anymore.
Point soon, when you start getting undressed, he's probably going to leave.
Right.
And be like, nah.
Right.
But do I have a responsibility at some point to be like, I'm in the shower, but I don't want to. I don't feel like that's natural.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Do your kids have free reign of your bedrooms Are, yeah. are kids allowed in the master bedroom mm-hmm. whenever they want?
Mine do.
That's sort of on their own terms.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, like mine will say he has to do 30 minutes of reading. He'll be like, can I go lay in your bed and read? Yes. Can I go watch a show in your room? I'd prefer you go downstairs, but sure.
Right.
But they do go in our room.
I mean, mm-hmm. I definitely have an awareness of like my sex toys, for example. Mm-hmm. Like I put it, you know, I've put it away as my daughter's gotten older because she'll go through my drawers looking for candy. I mean, I'm working. I'm not necessarily home all the time. And I can tell sometimes that my drawers have been rifled through.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Wow. And she's looking for candy or...
She's finding something else completely.
She's really looking for dildos.
Looking for dildos.
She's just looking through
exactly
your shit.
What's going on.
She just wants to know what's in your shit. She's like telling you, I'm just looking for a candy, but nobody's looking through your mother's underwear drawer for candy.
Right. No. And you know,
I just want to know what's in there.
I found things in her room before. I found makeup. She's taken my makeup.
She's taken your shit.
She's taken some of my shit before. Wow. So I just have to have an awareness.
I remember vividly when I was, I must have been 8 years old and visiting a friend. We found a dildo in his mom's drawer. And we were absolutely convinced that it was some sort of anatomical model for scientific purposes, like to study veins. And we literally had no idea what it could be used
for. Were you all like holding it?
For veins. Yeah. Like,
she was like veiny?
She like masturbated with it
with
later after
dildo.
Like 8-10-year-old boys would like held it.
I know. There was definitely a little bit of Cheeto dust
on
that.
That's why I put my sex toys up right there.
Could we do a show on techniques for hiding sex toys from kids?
Hiding anything from kids.
Hide it in something they would never go in.
Like a book.
Or health food.
Like a book.
Yeah. Like a book. Hollow out a book.
They're never going to read that.
Like a Bible. Here, I'll just keep a Bible over here. Yeah. Full of dildos.
They're never going to open that. That's never going to get cracked.
That is sacrilege. I apologize.
We should probably take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about how to have sex after your kids leave the house. Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. We are getting ready to understand what happens when the kids leave the nest. And I've always assumed that at that point, either parents get divorced finally after all those years of wanting it.
After all those years of waiting.
Or maybe they really get after it and pick up the pace with all the sex they haven't been having with kids in the house.
Rip their clothes off as the kids are pulling away to college.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's the case.
I'm hoping that's the case also. I'm planning on it being
depends on, as Lisa would say, if you've been keeping that the entire time.
Right. Hopefully you have, right?
Hopefully you keep the flame alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it in the kitchen again.
Yeah.
For the first time.
Absolutely.
In a while.
See, the problem with like doing it outdoors now is the Google camera satellites might be out there, and you don't want the Google picture of your house to be you doggy style.
Right. That's really the only problem with doing it outdoors.
It is. It's a legit concern.
So I think in general, like couples who transition into having a really good midlife when their kids transition, I do think Jen had a point. Like they've sort of kept romance alive or semi-alive kind of throughout their whole relationship. But I do think it's a good opportunity. Like suddenly, again, you have freedom of your time. You have freedom in your house.
And
you're
that
not
freedom
restricted
kind of,
just having sex in your bed.
And it kind of slowly starts, you know, slowly over those 18 years. I mean, you start where your kid's always there, but like... Mine are 6 and 10 now, and they go on play dates, they go do stuff, they go to sleepaway camp. So it does start getting better. So those opportunities, it's not like pre-kids and then 18 years later, you can finally have sex again. I know that we have kind of beat the dead horse about, you know, your vagina drying up and having erectile dysfunction.
Right.
But kind of, I'm just kind of curious at what age that sort of is typical.
Well, it depends. It's like, what age do women go through menopause, right? It can happen anytime.
Is it
between,
like 50s usually?
Yeah, I think the average is right around, like 52, I think is kind
and
of like...
You're saying that sort of the muscles of the vagina, it's kind of a use it or lose it situation.
It's a use it or lose it situation.
Okay, so if you want to be maintaining
strength over time,
intercourse over time,
right?
Then you need to be doing it, having intercourse over
doing
time.
Doing it semi-regularly.
Right.
The same hold for men, use it or lose it? Or is that just out of their control if they have ED
you'll never stop. You'll never stop using it.
But I'm just saying, though, I guess that's true. It just happens regardless.
Yeah, I mean, are guys with ED, are older folks with ED not masturbating anymore?
Hmm. oftentimes men with biological ED, they just sort of notice they're not waking up with morning erections as much, or when they get erections are not as strong as they used to be. But guys, more of the time, have situational erectile dysfunction when they're in their 30s or 40s.
So that's more common than true biological.
Yes, that's more common. And it's a lot of it ends up coming from like not having regular sex, right? Like sort of having stage fright.
And then you get anxious, right?
Right.
I shy away from this idea that all I have to look forward to in my retirement years is petting and cuddling. We sort of always get there that the sexual script changes, that there's no more penetration. And that's so,
but there can
there's
be.
So little hope in that
but
for
there,
me.
There can be. I mean, it's not like you can never have penetration. You could
you can maintain your erection,
or you can just stuff it in,
or you can just stuff it
that
all
visual
in.
Right,
just stuff it in dry and rubbery. I think I prefer,
it's like an old sock.
I prefer to think about the situation where old people really are getting after it, older folks, senior citizens, let's be respectful. But you hear about stories in retirement homes and communities where chlamydia went through the whole damn thing because everybody's doing
it. That's true.
Right.
Yeah. Good for them.
And absolutely. I like to think that there is some hope that you can stay after it and not dry up.
So Ben, you don't have to get depressed thinking about your old age, because it's very possible. Like, you can still get and maintain erections and you can still have intercourse.
I have a lot of hope for Ben.
You do?
I think he's using it enough that I don't anticipate a problem.
I mean, I don't always use it for good.
I mean, even if it's being used for bad things,
I've
it doesn't
it
know
for
the
evil.
Difference.
I may have stirred a drink with it.
It doesn't know the difference.
Oh, I love that visual.
Did you stir
well.
My drink before we sat down to record this podcast?
How's that water taste? Yeah. But legitimately though, is that why you find a lot of 80-year-old men with 30-year-old women? Because they can't get what they want from, they can't have intercourse or whatever with an older lady. I mean, that seems pretty typical. I mean, you think about Hugh Hefner and Tony Randall and all these men, or even Donald Trump, anybody. It's often men getting with younger women. And is it a lot of that biologically, sexually driven, because these women they can actually have sex with?
Yeah, I mean, partially. I also think, you know, they're attracted to what they're attracted to.
Younger
women. So older women maybe aren't cutting it for them. But I don't necessarily know if the sex, you know, how the sex is. I don't know. I wonder also, like, with older men and younger women, like, are the women really sexually satisfied?
They're probably monetarily satisfied.
Right. Because if you're having sex with, like, you know, a 75-year-old man and you're 30 years old.
For what? Why, I mean, why is that?
Right.
I mean, you can't help to compare it to like a 30-year-old man with a 30-year-old woman.
Of the people with erectile dysfunction, 90% reported to have knowledge of Cialis or Viagra or whatever it was.
Right.
But of those 90% who knew about it, only 10% of them were actually using it.
Right. Well, so if you think about it, it's like an upper class thing to
issue?
Like go, well, I mean, you know.
Is it an upper class thing?
Poor people don't go to the doctor. So you have to go to a doctor in order to get a prescription for.
It might not be cheap. That seems like the kind of thing that you charge a premium for.
It's covered by insurance.
It is.
You have to have insurance.
You have to have insurance.
That was a big deal because it was covered by insurance, but like they're fighting to not have birth control covered by insurance.
How is that medically necessary?
It's not.
It's not, but men sort of, well, we won't get into the politics of all the pharmaceutical stuff. But yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about recreational use of it. Like younger guys using it. Is that just so they're like super hard, super staying power? Like, what is the reason that a younger person, maybe as young as yourself, Ben,
it's sport fucking.
Right, it is, right?
It's for
so
sport.
You can just go forever.
Have you ever tried it?
To feel muy macho. I don't have any trouble in that area.
We're not saying you need it.
I don't
right.
know
we're
why.
Saying
I feel like there's a lot of eyes on me all of a sudden. I'm feeling a lot of judgment coming towards
there's
me.
There's no judgment. We have.
Turn the AC on for a minute.
We have tons of confidence in your very strong erection. We're just curious if you've used it for recreational uses.
For hanging a towel?
Correct.
I've hung a towel on it. And
stirred a drink.
I've stirred a drink with it. No, I've never tried it recreationally. I'm not saying I'd be adverse to it, but I mean, if you don't feel the need for it, I can't imagine wanting to have a 4-hour erection and clearing off the coffee table every time you turn around. But I think that
stabbing everybody.
Jeez.
Don't go to the grocery store. You're probably going to stab the person.
Slamming it in the door.
Yeah.
I don't think I care to experiment with that. That's kind of scary to me.
We also have the impression that we're talking like 12, 15 inches here, Ben. sliding everything off the coffee table, slamming it in the door.
That's an exaggeration. I mean, not a smidgen past 10 inches, okay, probably. But I don't know. I mean, we could go metric.
Give or take.
Let's go bigger with the metric
system. Maybe 25.7 centimeters, roughly. But no, if we're being totally honest, I'm in the ballpark of roughly 8 whopping centimeters.
It's about average.
You and Howard Stern?
I'm pretty sure that's average. I don't know how we got on this topic. I thought we were talking about boner pills.
Yeah,
about
boner pills.
My mediocre penis.
But you're... Yeah, but we look to you.
I just wanted to know if you had ever used boner pills recreationally.
I would. Is it illegal for me to say that I would try that, or I'd be curious to know?
No, it's not illegal.
I think it's really easy to get.
Yeah.
The last time I talked to my doc about my ADD meds, which apparently can cause hypertension, which apparently can cause vascular restriction.
Yes.
Right.
I've never had that problem, but he was like, oh, just let me know if you have a problem with that. We'll get you something else.
You know, if your penis is soft.
I don't think they care. I think they'll prescribe anything.
I think they will, too.
Would you guys ever try the lady pill?
Well, the difference is you have to take it for like 6 months.
And it's psychiatric.
Yeah, so it's not like I can be like, ooh, let's give this a try and this will be awesome in 6 months.
Right.
I mean, it's totally different.
I have tried. You can buy like cannabis spray that you like spray on your lady parts to try to give it like...
To attract men.
Just to try and give it increased sensation.
To attract the stoners. Like, I smell weed.
Just like the Pied Piper of stoners.
For real. I swear to God, I tried it. It's called like Forte.
Yeah.
Oh. So I like spray this concoction on my vagina and then we wait.
And then you got a yeast infection.
You have to wait like 20 minutes. That was like my nightmare.
And you had to call the doctor. You're like, I need every antibiotic under the sun.
Yeah, but her doctor works at the dispensary, so it's not an issue.
I didn't notice anything to be different.
It didn't do any. You weren't like, damn.
No.
Let's get it on.
I was like, it feels like Wednesday.
Feels like my vagina just smoked a joint.
Certainly smells like it.
It blew smoke rings.
Right. That's what it was. That was the excitement. He gets high during oral sex. That's the difference. He can get high during oral sex.
That's really the only appeal. There was a period of time when cannabis was legal in Colorado that I was using edibles to sleep better. I was having some insomnia. Mm-hmm. They don't prescribe it for that, but anybody who's tried edibles knows that you can sleep for 10
It'll
hours straight.
Knock you out. Right. Yeah.
And what I found, though, was that when that overlapped with sex night, that it was way more fun.
Sex night was way more fun.
Yeah.
I think good sex correlates with being relaxed, and people have a tough time achieving being relaxed.
In this day and age, right? Because you're like, oh, my phone just went off. Oh, I just heard an email come in. It's 9 o'clock at night. Right. Do I have to answer it?
That, I think, is kind of like the desire booster. Like, you know, sex is a tension reducer and a relaxant. And I think more men get that versus women. Women are kind of like last to the table on that one. Mm-hmm. But the women that know that and understand that and believe that, I think have better sex lives. Sex doesn't produce tension. It reduces tension.
Right.
So if you're stressed...
It shouldn't be anxiety producing.
Right. If you're stressed, you should have sex.
Right.
It will chill you out.
So we've established that there's still hope for old folks and that you can still have sex and it doesn't have to be an old catcher's mitt. And it doesn't have to be a flaccid noodle.
No.
And you have to stuff it in rubbery and whatever you said.
We don't
that
have
so
to
gross.
Stuff anything.
No stuffing.
But what I'm concerned about getting to real quick is the situations when you can't overcome issues. I'm sort of daunted by the thought of having to accept an accident or
paralysis.
Something that might, maybe paralysis, maybe something that changes your chemistry or a psychological impact. And I'm wondering if you've had people come to you in that situation where they couldn't have sex anymore.
I have a client who I'm very close to who see me over a number of years who a few years ago fell off of a ladder and broke his back and ended up in a wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
And so I got sort of a front row seat at learning all about like sexuality after disability. He was my client for probably 4 or 5 years. Before
so was there must, was there a heavy mourning period for him once that happened?
Yeah, I think there was a mourning period just around like all the changes.
Yeah,
you know?
That was just one of them.
Yeah, it's like
of
loss
many.
Of your independence and like kind of just the absorbing the impact of that. But he still has a sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. Their sexual relationship has changed.
He was married.
He was getting a divorce when he fell and ended up, he was dating a woman and they ended up getting married.
Okay.
Oh, wow. She's
so
stuck with him.
She stuck with him. Yeah. She's really a pretty fantastic girl.
And is there any chance the ex-wife was involved with the fall?
No. No. Okay.
We can rule that one out.
We can rule that one out. Yeah, as people get diagnosed with illnesses, as injuries happen, I think people, you know, if they want to, will continue to try to find ways to connect physically, even if it looks different than it did before whatever happened happens.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I imagine there's people that just lose the interest in sex altogether, that something can
happen
where you just shut down.
But there's, you know, a whole industry that's basically making products for people who have disabilities and injuries and illnesses.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There's things called like the Easy Rider, which is like a glide thing. There are sex swings.
Wait a minute. A glide thing.
It's called like the Easy Rider.
What does that mean?
It fits under your bed, right? So you like basically pop it up and somebody sits on it and you just use it like you just use your arms.
So that's
like,
for somebody who's paralyzed?
Correct.
Okay.
So something like that. There's all kinds of like...
Joe's getting one. He's on Amazon right now.
Joe's buying an Easy Rider.
It's the first thing he hasn't heard of that we've talked about.
Totally.
Right. There's sex swings where people...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I never thought about that for somebody who's paralyzed.
Who has a disability.
Right.
For
that's
sure.
Smart.
There's a whole company that makes all kinds of different wedge and pillow looking things.
Oh, mm-hmm. I've seen those wedges.
Yeah, but they're made out of materials that are non-slippery. So you can like put it on a bed on top mm-hmm. of a sheet and it will like stick. So it's not like moving all over the place. I mean, sure, there's a whole industry, you know, made for people that are looking to be sexual after illness or disability or with some sort of a problem.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
Well, that's good.
I was on
happy to hear that.
Yeah. I think I was on like Twitter a couple of weeks ago and I saw a girl who I guess at her bachelorette party was pushed playfully into a pool and ended up like being paralyzed. So she did like a boudoir photo shoot.
Yeah.
So it was her bra, panties, and her like colostomy bag.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Her catheter. It was her catheter bag. And she was basically like posing, being like, you know, we
this
still.
This is what it is.
It was like, her bachelorette party?
Yeah, it was her bachelorette party.
And she got married still at the same
time? Mm-hmm. She got married.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But imagine basically saying, like, you know, she was trying to figure out how to be sexual following, like, a horrible accident.
And she was. Like, the pictures,
she looked great.
She looked great. She was very sexy, seductive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was pretty impressive.
It seems like maybe in that situation, the woman is more capable still after the accident.
You know, I think that... In life, things happen, and human beings have an amazing way of prevailing.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking a little bit more about the plumbing and how a guy that's paralyzed from the waist down might not have the ability.
You can use Viagra, and even if you don't have feeling, it can still produce an erection.
Oh, really?
You can use a penis pump in tandem with the Viagra, where you take a Viagra, put a cock ring on, put the penis pump over the penis, pump it up, and you can have an erection.
Wow.
And And it's interesting because talking to my client about, like, you know, even though you don't have the sensation, you know, he said he's just more relied now on visual. He said he was always a visual person, but now he really needs visual, like lights on, needs to see what he's doing because that helps him to be turned on even though he doesn't have sensation.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Okay, so this might be a crazy question. So can he have, I mean, I know that the physicalness of an orgasm, but is there something in your brain or you can still have that sensation?
Right. So I think that he can still orgasm, but he says like the sensation is very, very dull.
Sure. But he can.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's interesting.
But it took him a while to figure out how to be able to.
We talked about some of the sort of the physical hurdles to sex in old age, but there's other issues like Alzheimer's and dementia that create a gray area in terms of consent. And Jen, you had a sort of a current events version of this.
There's a man who was arrested for having sex with his wife, and she is very far down the Alzheimer's path. And he was actually arrested for having sex with her because they said she couldn't consent.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Super tricky. I mean, we get that it's gray enough when they're young. We've talked about that. But boy, you think that once you hit 18, that issue is no longer a problem for you.
Right.
It almost sounds, Jen, like it maybe relates more to this idea that once upon a time you couldn't, rape didn't exist within marriage.
Correct.
And I think it's safe to say that nowadays, you know, rape can be defined within a marriage.
I think it was in the early 80s when it became a law that you can, because that stuff all happened with Donald Trump a couple weeks ago. We were there. His book from the 80s came out, and he was accused of that with Ivana.
The cases we're reading about have been reported, but I think about how many times it's unreported.
Oh, right.
Because sure. Somebody's not living in a facility. Like, what about if you're just right. caring for an aging parent in your own home and, you know?
Or you have a visiting caregiver.
Right.
Sure.
You know, and I also think when you are in a facility, you can't be supervised 24 hours a day, seven days a week, unless you're paying like for a private nurse, which most of the time people can't afford.
No.
My recollection when I've been in those types of facilities is they're fairly open. You know,
doors they usually want all the doors open.
All the doors are open. If a door is closed, you know, somebody's checking in on what's going on behind that door, like with pretty good frequency.
But I can also see a husband coming in and then saying, I just want some time with my wife, and closing the door, right. and then being like, of course, you've been married for 50 years.
Exactly. Right. And if she's
some
not,
time together.
If she's not screaming, I mean, right. you know, maybe she was okay.
What if she was enjoying herself?
Well, she might have midway through gotten confused. I mean, who knows?
But that goes back to a 14-year-old could be enjoying themselves, but they're still not legally able to give consent.
Right.
Yeah. So, boy, that's a toughie.
I don't have any answers on this one.
I don't either, but it's an issue.
It's an issue, and
because more and more people
worth discussing.
You know, baby boomers are getting older, and the nursing facilities are going to be super full in starting in a couple of years, and so that is going to be an issue ongoing they're going to have to deal with.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, I guess that brings us to the end of another show.
The takeaway from this show is talk to your kids about sex and buy long-term care insurance.
Yeah, or a tab of cyanide to keep just in case.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Family Affairs.
Please subscribe.
Subscribe.
Please subscribe through iTunes and give us a great review.
Or you can go fuck yourself.
The sex therapist recommends that you do go home and fuck yourself.
Links to resources we mentioned in today's show can be found on our website,
smartstudio.media.
While you're there, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
You can find me, Lisa Thomas, at Lisa the Sexpert on Twitter or onlinecouch.com.
You can find me, Jen Siegel, at Jen Love Stars on Twitter.
And I'm Dick Scurvy on Twitter. Dick Scurvy. Dick. By the way, if you have any questions or stories to share, please feel free to email us at familyaffairs@smartstudio.media.
The views expressed in this program are those of the participants appearing on the show and not those of Smart Studio or its employees. Come back and see what we talk about next week.
Please tune in next week for another great episode.
See you next week. Bye.
That's why Joe's never stressed out.
Look at Joe over there.
Look how chill he is over there. He is always
so relaxed.
Lounging and
chill.
He's
having sex right now. In his hand.
Erica just moved a half a foot.
I know. I think we should probably discuss the sexual harassment policy real quick.